For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Let's go. We're back here with another episode of Conspiracy Chaos. What's happening, everybody? Appreciate everybody tuning in. My name is RGB. Got a special episode here tonight. Going to be bringing you guys our first guest. Joining me, as always, is Florida Mike. What's happening, brother?
What's going on, brother?
How them chemtrails down there?
Oh, heavy. Heavy today.
Yeah.
They're playing tic-tac-toe. They even had it on us. We have a local social media page.
Yeah.
And it was literally a tic-tac-toe board. And they said, tic-tac-toe anyone? So then fellow believers were screenshotting the tic-tac-toe and putting their X's and circles in it and then posting it back on the page. So people were literally playing tic-tac-toe today.
That's crazy. And then we got Area 51 Ant in the house. What's up, buddy?
What's going on?
Yo, Ant, let me ask you real quick. You ever hear I know you knew the conspiracies, but the Nephilim, bro?
I have.
Yeah, I got a chance.
The big fellas, right?
Yeah, I got a chance back when the Tinfoil Hat comedy came out to Connecticut. I got to meet one with our guest tonight. We got the host of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, my man Mark. Mark, what's happening, brother?
Hello, yes. The conspiracy Nephilim. Although I never elected to be called that. I think if Nephilim walked the earth, I'm probably not going to get along with them based on the things I talk about. But happy to be here. pleasure to be on the show. And yeah, it was cool to meet you, Roger, at the Tinfoil Hat Comedy Show with Sam Tripoli out in Broadbrook, Connecticut. So
yeah, it was a good time out there. I've been to both times they came out. I usually try to get to any time he comes out to the East Coast, you know, him being L.A., so I try to get to most of them, like New Jersey. I go down there a lot. He was actually up in Saratoga with Howie Dewey a couple of years back. And that's about a 30-minute ride from me, so that was nice. Went out to Buffalo one time. So I get a chance to see him a bunch when he comes out. And I got a good relationship with XG from my other podcast, the Pitch Button Puff, and the We Don't Smoke the Same connection. So that's he's helped me out with a lot of shit, too. So, but, man, it's a pleasure to have you on, dude, for sure. Before we really get rolling, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into the conspiracy thing?
Well, yeah, like you said, you met me at the Tinfoil Hat Comedy Show. I work with Sam Tripoli on the Tinfoil Hat podcast as the booker. And around the time that I started working for Sam was around the same time that I'd quit my previous job at the height of the COVID BS. And I started my podcast, and my whole family was like kind of shocked because they were all really proud of the place I was in my life, as far as, you know, the job I had. It was a good job in their eyes. So me quitting was a big shock, but, you know, as you guys will find out as I tell you more about my backstory, like, I've always been interested in this stuff, and this is kind of my calling, in a sense, at least I feel that way at this point, is to talk about this stuff, help educate people about what our real history is, what this propaganda really means, why are we being propagandized, what does the occult have to do with it, right? Because that's a huge element, as I'm sure you guys have talked about, if you're mentioning the Nephilim, right? Yep. So, yeah, when it comes to the title of the show, it kind of reflects that. Like, my family thought I was crazy for quitting my job, but in another sense, they've always thought I was crazy. Yeah. Anytime I've expressed any sort of idea of my own that, you know, particularly was contrarian, because as young people like to do, I particularly was a smart ass when I was younger, maybe still am. A little bit of a know-it-all. So, yeah, my family's always thought I was crazy, but I've tried to temper that with, you know, caring earnestly about what I'm interested in, and knowing that what I'm researching isn't to a selfish end. It's because I want to help others. And the conflict was, well, you know, the people closest to you don't always receive the information that's closest to you. Right. So what do? You have to find a community elsewhere. In a lot of cases, there's a phrase, you know, never a prophet recognized in his own country, or something to that effect. Right. So I'm not calling myself a prophet by any means, but I think anytime somebody embarks down this path of questioning things radically, no matter what angle that comes to them from, whether that's the, you know, 9/11 conspiracy flavor of it, or maybe the biblical conspiracy flavor of it, or anywhere else in between. You know, if we were in, you know, India, maybe there's a whole strain of conspiracy theories that are centric to people in India, because their issues are completely different than ours, but also pretty similar. I mean, the Indians were oppressed by the British Empire just as much as the American colonies were. So, all along around about way of saying I'm a nerd who loves weird stuff, and that's partly why my family thinks I'm crazy, and I'm kind of recklessly passionate about it. So the COVID pandemic was a great opportunity for me to say, well, everything's going to shit anyways, might as well throw it all at the wall and risk it for this, I guess. And in the other sense, like, I didn't have any other option. Like, I didn't want to put up with the regulations they were putting on us. I was an Amazon delivery driver. That's the great job I was alluding to, which was great in context of what I had been doing previous to that, which was just, you know, floating around smoking weed and really not making much of an impact on anything. So, yeah, I've always been interested in reading, as the background, which is not a green screen, might suggest. And then, of course, when I found podcasting, I immediately was like, all right, I need to start getting jobs where I can listen to podcasts at work. So I became a delivery guy. So it all kind of led to this. And for the past 3 or 4 years now, 4 years, it feels like three, I've been doing the podcast. I'm about to hit episode 500 pretty soon. So that's a cool milestone. Yeah. And
awesome.
And, you know, doing stuff on the road with Sam, like going out to see his shows and meeting people who listen to my podcast, is a really cool reward from the hard work I've put in. And I want to do more of that this year, where maybe we'll even go and create some kind of tour of our own. Not a comedy tour, obviously. I'm not a comedian, but there's a ton of stuff that I've been researching that I'm meaning to go and explore. And why not bring company along, you know, bring some like minds. So yeah, that's kind of what might come next. But as far as like how this all started, I've just always been interested in questioning things, and a bit of a smart ass and curious too. Like, I've always loved learning. So that's how I got here. And particularly like the fine details as to how I began researching Skull and Bones, that's a story we can get into as well. But just generally, like, what got me interested in conspiracies, 9/11 had a huge impact. Being interested in martial arts had a big impact. You know, there's a couple of things that kind of led to me being interested in conspiracies. But those, what I've mentioned, is probably like the predominant influences.
Yeah. When I was a kid, for me, it was Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, like the cryptid thing was the conspiracy. But I was
absolutely
18. Yeah, I was like 18 when 9/11 happened, and just like starting, I think at the time of my life where I was old enough to realize what was really going on, and, you know, it started opening my eyes to the bigger picture to things. And that's when the conspiracy journey really opened up for me. Then I dove back into like JFK, like the basic ones. And then you start to get deeper and deeper into it. And then I found Sam and the crew, and I've learned so much just from listening to that podcast alone.
With
some of the stuff and branching off to the other ones.
So Raj and my boy Mikey really got me into it. And since about a year ago, and I've had sleepless nights going down the rabbit holes, bro. That I always say, you know, Raj, fuck you, man. I didn't even sleep last night because you start going, bro, and then you start clicking on the links, and then you watch a video, then you read the comments, and then you go click the other video, and you go to research it, and then it's just crazy the shit that's out there and the shit that we were lied to. Really, what so my boy Mikey, my best friend, he was the one really that I knew before Raj, and he used to send me shit, and I'd be like, Mike, stop sending me stupid shit. Come on, man. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. What is this? And then it was really COVID that did it for me with the vaccine and just seeing just a whole world just fall for it, bro.
To see how many people literally just gave up their like rights to fucking go out and do something they wanted to do was just crazy to me, with no pushback at all. But yeah, 9/11.
It's a slow roll. I mean, there's periodically been event after event after event that have conditioned the population to be subservient in a certain direction that aids the, you know, power, the power party, whether that's the outward facing form of government or the various factions behind that, which are not always so out in the open, right? So, yeah. 9/11 was a big one. I was only in first grade. I was born in 1994, so I was only like 7 or 8 when 9/11 happened. But even at that young age, it had a huge impact on us. And what always stuck with me was how the moment the event took place, and you were 18, so I imagine you were probably out of high school by then.
Yeah, I was a freshman in college, yeah.
Okay, so maybe you'll have a college experience that'll match this. But when I was in elementary school and on the day of 9/11, when the news broke, you know, we were just getting into school, right? Because it was like 9 a.m. the early, I think, in the state of Connecticut. I think it's the same everywhere. But, you know, elementary school kids, they go in last, right? High school kids go to school first, yada, yada. So we were just getting in. And I remember just being like kind of excited, like, because all of a sudden, instead of the normal routine, we're going into the library to watch something on television. And then, you know, we're all kind of like horrified by what we're seeing and confused. And, you know, you at 6 or 7, you're so young that you like, if they told us that was a movie, we wouldn't have had any.
Oh, they brought you in to watch the
they had us watch it live, which I've always thought, you know, back in those days in the 90s, they'd have like the big hulking television that they'd wheel on a cart, you know. So they pulled that into the library, and we were all watching it happen on the library.
Well, didn't they do that for the rocket that crashed? Didn't they bring all the kids? The Challenger. My mom told me that they did that for the Challenger, that they brought all the kids in to watch the video on the Challenger.
It's all part of the big trick, though. They want for him,
For him to be six, seven years old to wheel out a TV in front of these kids to show them on, you know, 9/11.
You got
to
watch that paid programming. You got to brainwash them early.
Holy shit.
Right. And I went to public school, you know, so I doubt that same thing protocol happened at like a private school, which, as you know, growing up in Connecticut, there are just as many private schools as there are public schools, because there's a huge, division between poor and really wealthy people here in the state. But I think that was, just protocol, like condition the kids. Which to me later now, with all I know now, I'm like, oh yeah, maybe they were, there was a little bit more of a, you know, insidious angle there where they really were like, all right, this thing's happening. We need to show the kids. Cause I don't know. I think the more sane reaction would be to just let us be a little bit oblivious and have our parents decide whether they wanted to tell us about what was going on. But this is, as we might get into with some of the stuff that I've been researching, like, this is kind of like the arm of the government, the education system. You guys have heard Rockefeller education. Mm-hmm. You've heard that phrase before. So we know at this point that the education system has been fundamentally, you know, kneecapped and altered to not educate the minds, but to indoctrinate the minds. Okay. Yeah. So when did this occur? When did this begin to happen? Well, first of all, we have to understand that the whole concept of going to school up into a certain point in history, only a couple centuries ago, I mean, this was relegated to only people who were in a religious sect or of a certain social status, class, right? So not everybody went to school. As a matter of fact, most people didn't go to school, right? It was only in the 19th century that people began going to school on a mass level like this, okay? Before that, it was people who were going for a specialized trade would learn from other people practicing that trade directly. There wouldn't be, you know, these big establishments set up. In certain cases, you know, but for the most part, school was focused on religion, right? So you would go to school and it would be centered around a church. If you're a Christian, you know, Catholic, what have you, same thing, you know, around the world with other religions as well. For the most part, you know, education was relegated to religion. And then with the advent of the printing press, you know, we have more materials being able to be circulated. So this is only 400 years ago or so that we really even started having the material to educate people on a mass level. Before that, it was relegated to specific centers, okay, on the planet. And these same places were where the powerful and wealthy were. They concentrated it. So, you know, all this history, just to say that what we have in America is kind of like an experiment. And the same thing happened in the rest of the world. It's a byproduct of the Industrial Revolution, right? We're creating these massive industrial scale projects. We need people to fill those roles. So they created the education system around that. But here's the thing. That's the exoteric explanation. The esoteric explanation is we want to extend this university system that is taking people away from what traditionally took place in Europe, which was there'd be community learning. Okay. You'd have a Bible and you'd have a church leader and a congregation of people who would, you know, teach each other what was necessary to live life. And you know, they didn't need to go much beyond the Bible. But you have these sort of Gnostic, atheist, liberal, you know, words that now we think of as like, you know, kind of loaded terms in many senses. But all of these movements led to like a progressive sort of state that in some ways challenges in a very major way the conservative sort of history or tradition. And this is where conspiracy has always been rooted. It's always been rooted in this conservatism versus liberalism. I mean, it's really that simple, and it kind of goes down to the Hegelian dialect and these larger forces. But at the end of the day, education is meant to manipulate you. It's not meant to educate you. Real learning happens between you and your creator, between you and your heart space, your consciousness. This is where real learning occurs, in nature, with others. So I think this is something that people on a more serious level, we need to start taking this into consideration. And the first step to that is by breaking the chain. And, you know, whether they know all this history or not, the homeschooling thing is becoming popular nowadays. Oh, yeah. So I think if anybody is listening, they have parents and they're concerned about indoctrination of their children, the first step is to, you know, just separate them from that huge line of, you know, secession of indoctrination. There's alternative schools and whatnot, but I think at the end of the day, when you look at American history, it's through the universities and these sort of elite-oriented systems that America has become progressively more in the hands of this thing, this force that we can simplify calling it the Illuminati. But it's grown much larger than just that one group that we can look up on Wikipedia and call the Illuminati. Because things don't happen in isolation like that. They're evolving. They move and flow through time, just like words, and their meanings change. These groups take on different forms. But at the end of the day, America has been forever sort of, the trajectory has kind of changed at some key points. One was obviously the revolution, but before that, the Great Awakening. And then after the revolution, during the French Revolution, this is when America really started to change in a direction that I think led us to what we're talking about as globalism now, right? So when you're looking at globalism and you're seeing all these threats of one world order, new world order, government tyranny, like this is what the Vatican, the royals, the secret societies, they've all been dreaming of this stuff for centuries upon centuries. This is their goal. And you know, if religion doesn't get them there, then science will. If science doesn't get them there, well, whatever comes after that. But that's kind of the simplest way I could put my research at this point in time. It's like I went into studying Skull and Bones from like the pop conspiracy angle of like, there's a secret group of men at this very influential college and they do homosexual occult rituals with each other to blackmail each other and instill this sort of secrecy, this, atmosphere of anybody can turn on you at any moment in time, right? You are always second guessing your peers, your friends, even your family. This is the kind of hyper scrutiny these people live under, and it makes them into calculated psychopaths. And it's kind of a cliche, but there's a statistic that says that, like, you know, something percentage of CEOs have psychopathic traits. And this isn't like an anomaly or statistical coincidence. This is because these psychological traits are favored by the organization, by the structure of the organization, which all goes back to the Vatican and the royal families. I mean, that's really where most of what we take for granted now as aspects of our society come from the Vatican and the various secret societies that the royal families, in conjunction with the Vatican, you know, they took on different names and different appearances, but that was mostly because they were fighting with each other, right? Yep. So like, you have the Knights of Malta, the Templars, the Freemasons, the Jesuits, the Priory of Zion. Some of these are even like altogether kind of fabricated, or they say they're fabricated, like the Rosicrucians, right? They'll say, oh, the Rosicrucians actually didn't exist. So again, you have to keep your head on a swivel and know that even though someone will tell you, oh, it's all the Jesuits, oh, it's all the Freemasons, like, yes and yes, because they're all connected. The mob, yeah. It's all connected.
So, it's all the same line. Wasn't the Rothschilds, Yeah. They were the Bowers originally, right? And then they changed their name to the Rothschilds. Was that them when they came over?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I've heard that Bower family name before. But
How about the P family?
Oh yeah,
that was one of my favorite episodes, man. That was one of the first Sam episodes I listened to.
That's the one I send to people when they first get into conspiracies. I say, listen to this episode and then let me know what you think. Because it's kind of like Mel K does a great job, like just breaking it down, like how it really all works from the Federal Reserve and just the power structure from that point of view, too. So
wild. crazy.
It's craziness. It's absolutely crazy. And it's crazy. It goes so deep. Like, you're right with the Vatican. They have so many secrets hidden in that joint that it's crazy. It really is.
Yeah.
The Vatican has a contract on Israel, right? Like, they own most of Israel.
I was just going to say I thought the Rothschilds loaned money for the Vatican. That's what I don't know of that. I thought I saw that in one of the rabbit holes too. When they built it.
There's a network. They're certainly connected. The Rothschilds and the Vatican are definitely connected.
Templars are connected to the Vatican, I think, too.
As far as what you just said, though, about the Vatican and Israel, I wouldn't doubt it. But I do know that Israel was founded by Freemasons from England. You know, it's kind of like a Anglo project, which it's a carry-on of the Crusades in many ways. Like, they're centuries and centuries and centuries of fighting over the Holy Land has to do with what it says in the Bible, what the prophets said during those times, and these prophecies that people have, you know, put lifetimes, generations into, you know, not only owning these lands, but holding them and fighting over them. Like, why would they, if there wasn't some sort of power there, whether that's, you know, land connected, like the land itself, or maybe there are artifacts or scrolls, information that's only available there and it's still not been found. But the fact is that that place has been fought over for, thousands of years. And I think it definitely has to do with the prophecy and the ideas that are conveyed in the Book of Revelation, you know. And some people say, oh, well, the Book of Revelation already happened, and now we're in this kind of like little season of Satan's reign. And I don't know enough about any of that to comment, but I have heard, I've talked about it a few months or so ago on my podcast with Paul Stobbs. But yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, when you look at all these secret societies, they definitely seem to be connected. There's definitely feuds between the two of them, but their main focus seems to be around the Middle East, particularly Israel, and maybe even particularly, you know, the Temple of Solomon or this site where Christ, you know, came out of the tomb. Like, there's all these different aspects that, you know, but I think it, and again, this is right here, what I'm about to say is just speculation, but I think it has to do with Christ living on and having children. And that gets into the Holy Grail and the Merovingian bloodline and all this. But I think that's why they're so obsessed with bloodlines, you know, aside from the occult dark ritual things connected to blood. For the most part, I think a lot of what they're fighting over is the ability to say, you know, we are definitively the Israelites. Like, we are connected to the Israelites from the Bible. I think that's really what it goes down to. And there's a whole rabbit hole of what you can, the phrase is British Israelism or something to that effect. And there was a time period in England where they were, after the Protestants had pretty much taken control of England, there was this whole Kabbalistic resurgence. What's the Kabbalah? The Kabbalah is the magic from the Old Testament. It's Hebrew magic, and also the books that go along with the Old Testament, like the Talmud. And I think there's even the Kabbalah itself, which is the title of a book. But the Kabbalists and the Kabbalah and this whole occult renaissance was very influential on England at a certain point in history that led up to them taking Israel. So there's also the Suez Canal, which is extremely important. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't own that piece of waterway, you have to sail all the way around Africa to get what you want in Asia, right? So that probably is the main thing. And it's, you know, it's very similar to what we have here in North and South America with the Panama Canal. you know, which is now the American Canal, which is what it should be called because we built the damn thing.
Right.
So, yeah.
I will second that. I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
For sure, man.
So when you were talking about feuds within the families, you know, the different societies, do you think that's current right now as you see Trump trying to shut down the WHO, the WEF, the federal? Do you think that's, are we trying to see a surge of change of power here? Or
could be, you know, I as far as I've seen, you know, it's more than just families. They're not all related in this kind of incestuous way. It's factions too. And it seems like Trump is connected to this very religious sort of faction that is connected to Israel, connected to the Vatican, connected to the Jesuits. I'm pretty sure Trump was educated at the University of Pennsylvania, which was founded by a Jesuit. So, and it, very much has Jesuit Jesuit ties to this day. There's a ton of other Jesuits. I mean, the Jesuit list goes on and on and on.
And that would track too. It tracks. Everything you're saying would track because we were talking about the plane crash. Right days before that, Trump got promoted to 33-degree Mason.
So Where was that?
I read it on... Crap, now I'm brain farting. I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, we were talking about it.
I was looking it up recently, and there isn't any that I was able to find. But hey, maybe I didn't look hard enough. But
it was a couple months ago, and then when I tried to look for it recently, it wasn't there anymore.
And then it got scrubbed. I did see the video. I remember the video you sent me of him sitting there like this, and they were like, they put the
sash or whatever on him.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I remember a video. I don't know if that was a ceremony of anything, but you did send me a video.
Who knows if it's fucking AI nowadays?
Yeah, well, that's true.
And I said that too. I said, could this be real? Yeah, I mean,
that's another thing with this conspiracy world, and questioning everything. You got to question if things are AI too out there. I'm talking with like the ant, with all like, I mean, when with the drone bullshit. I mean, a lot of that when the whole drones were happening. I mean, the AI world was going crazy with all you know, they were having fun with a lot of those videos. And I was like, that ain't real. But like, you know, some of this shit was real, but you definitely got to do your research for sure. Because AI is crazy. It's awesome.
I don't want to give in to the, I don't want to give into the hopium, but you know, from what I've looked into, it does seem like Trump has done some things that would make you think he's so knowledgeable about how these dirty politics work that he's beating them at their own game. Now, if that means that, you know, he's doing that because he himself is just better than them at their own game and is in fact also corrupt, that could be the case. But I don't know. It does seem like there is a sort of nationalism that goes against the whole push of the secret society's infiltration into America in the first place. Now, it could be the Hegelian thing where they push you towards the opposite so that the public reacts to, you know, whatever they design to be, you know, the control, right? You have one or the other, you push them towards one, like what they're doing now. They're pushing the leftism stuff. So naturally, people are more interested in rebelling against that and being interested in like the right wing or the more neutral, interesting kind of media, right? It's why conspiracy theories have, you know, remained popular no matter what political offices in, you know, it's when it was the Republicans with Bush, there were conspiracy theories. Obama, there's conspiracy theories. But I think with Trump, as far as his Freemasonic connections, it's hard to find if there is any. There could be. I'm not doubting it. But it seems to me more likely that he's connected to Jesuits and probably doesn't even. I doubt he could be aware of it. I mean, there's a lot of cases there's, you know, people around you that sort of influence you to do certain things. And, you know, if you get the right amount of Jesuits or whoever, whatever group interest around somebody, you know, they could convince him. So yeah. I don't know. I don't think he's perfect. He's fallible.
Mike, they scrubbed that shit because that's nowhere. I'm looking everywhere.
Yeah, I couldn't find. I can't find it anywhere either.
Yeah, it could be. It could be that it.
It was a video, probably, that was just it was circling around on Instagram that you sent me that time. But it was something.
Well, here's the thing. Like, a lot of times what you see in TikTok and Instagram, you know, like, you could take a video out of context very easily. And if you're not steeped in, you know, what the actual Masonic dress looks like, then you might be mistaken. But there are some like pseudo Masonic organizations that the president probably is just a part of, just because Freemasonry is so tied into the government that like you receive honors from these different groups, and maybe they do put you through some kind of pseudo Masonic ceremony without you even knowing, right? Like, I don't know. I haven't seen the video, so I can't comment on it.
Yeah, I haven't
come across that research that says Trump's a Freemason, but I definitely think that he's against whatever group, Biden, Obama, the Bushes, and Clinton, Mark, even.
Makes me very happy because these guys know I'm a big supporter of Trump. And part of Mike said, I like him, but I think, I don't know, he might be into some evil shit with his Freemason. I like him. I like what he's doing, but I don't know. Just quiet. I'm quiet.
Can't trust
him.
Any of them.
No, I know. But what about you? Mark, what are your thoughts on Elon? What are your thoughts on Elon? I mean, do you trust him?
Well, I'm skeptical of everybody. I don't trust anybody in that sense unless I've met them. So, you know, same goes for Trump. It's a different situation when it's an elected official, but yeah, with Elon Musk, like, he's got connections to some pretty serious stuff going on in Africa as far as colonialism, despots of colonialism. You know, his father is involved in some pretty nefarious stuff over there with emeralds and diamonds. I don't think diamonds, because diamonds is all synced into the De Beers, but yeah, he's got some strange connections over there to the former country of Rhodesia, which, if you guys don't know, Rhodesia is named after Cecil Rhodes. Cecil Rhodes is the namesake of the Rhodes Scholarship. I remember when I was a kid, I first heard of a Rhodes Scholarship because Bill Clinton received the Rhodes Scholarship. And I just, in my mind, pictured like a road scholar, like a scholar on the road. No, that's not what it is. It's Cecil Rhodes, and Cecil Rhodes was a very, you know, if there ever was an English Illuminati, he was definitely a part of it, Freemason or otherwise. He was not a good guy, hence why his, you know, this African colony where slaughtered, you know, millions of people were slaughtered was named after him, right? So he probably... it's worth researching if you haven't heard of him. But yeah, Cecil Rhodes, his scholarship. It's interesting, all the people that have received his scholarship, because it's like, you know, this is how they put people in the places they want them to. They endow them with these different trusts and funds and money from these big, you know, wealthy accounts that have been accumulated for generations to uphold these agendas, these secret agendas.
Yeah, I brought it up here.
Then they send them to an Epstein party.
Well, yeah, that's a big part of it too, because how are you going to keep secrets if you don't have, you know, secrets on all the people involved, right? That's really what that's all about. And, you know, Epstein is just one small player in what really was Les Wexner's sex ring, and Les Wexner's the guy behind Victoria's Secret and all of these big underwear brand kind of fashion world type stuff, you know. So that where better to be if you're looking to traffic young women? I mean, you can dupe all these young, naive 15 to 18 year old women into thinking, you know, oh, do these things, break the rules, don't tell your parents, and you'll become a famous model. And then next thing you know, they're raped and screwed, not trying to, you know, minimize that in any way, and thrown off of a boat, you know, like, it's terrible. It's horrible what's going on in at towards the ends of political power. That's really what it's all about. Yes, there are depraved people in the world who want to do depraved things, and there's probably an occult history to this stuff. But politics is a cult. Like, you know, to think about politics and not understand the cult is, you know, it's like trying to put a recipe together and you don't know the first thing about cooking. Like, you know, like these are all connected things. Like they're fundamentally tied together, you know, going back to like the British Empire and their court of sorcerers, like John Dee and Francis Bacon, who pretty much gave us everything we have with the English language through Shakespeare. So, you know, conspiracies galore when you look at America, because like we've been steeped in these sorts of things from the onset, from the beginning. You know, that's a big part of what I've been researching with Skull and Bones in New Haven. And, you know, these Puritans, they leave Europe to find religious freedom, but then they become sort of tyrants of their own in these small little communities and colonies. And then it ends up having all these repercussions, which nowadays we think of as the, you know, progressivism. This is the idea of progressivism, that we progress towards an ideal. But you can also look at it in another sense, where there have been forces that have ushered us into this state of mind. And I'm starting to think of it as the Gnostic indoctrination, because Gnosticism is very much connected to everything that we know about science, or more properly, scientism. Gnosticism is this idea that God is sort of like not our friend, doesn't really care about us. He just created a world and then put us in it. And it's kind of sucks, and we should actually escape. We should aspire to escape and be in our soul body. This is like kind of it's a very simplified version of what Gnosticism is, which is fundamentally opposite to what Christians believe. Christians believe that, you know, you die and there's a afterlife when Jesus comes back, and there's going to be heaven on earth, right? Like these two ideas are very different. And it all goes back to the occult, because in the past, people were obsessed with these different idols and deities, and there was a lot of political power that the churches got from that, and it was wrapped into this idea of the afterlife. Because what's everyone's biggest fear? Dying, right? So how do you control people? You tell them what they want to hear, and you make them think that if they give you whatever you want from them, that they'll be safe in this unknowable, unreachable afterlife that we're all afraid of, but none of us have ever been to. So it's like the perfect carrot on the stick, and it's been manipulated. And I'm not advocating for one religion or another. I'm just telling, you know, the Western civilization's story, because Christianity is totally tied into what it means to be in the Western civilization. So all of this is predicated on Christianity, and the opposite or the adversary of Christianity, which has been simplified to almost a childish length, to where now most devout Christians run around in fear of something that they don't even understand. And worse, when they see it, they go so crazy about it that they don't ever rationally solve the problem that they're confronted with. So that's a big thing that I worry about with the occult, because, you know, I come at this from a non-Christian sort of perspective. I am interested in Christianity. I'm no way negating it. But, you know, for the most part, when I talk about the occult, people are like superstitious or maybe overly interested, to the point where now I'm superstitious of them, you know. So it's a weird back and forth. But my point overall is that, you know, with the occult, like there are these integral aspects of our culture that have been affected by the occult, and nowadays we think of them as like MK Ultra, right, is like what we think of as like mind control and how culture is manipulating us. But this is not new. This has just taken a new form in the modern age through entertainment, which for a long time in America, the first 100 years, the Puritans banned theater and any form of entertainment. And I have to wonder, like, why were they so afraid of entertainment? Maybe it was because back in Europe, there were these Gnostics who were indoctrinating people through the Shakespearean theater and getting them to mock Christianity and really move away from those traditions, which, again, maybe that's just the inevitability of progressivism and the way humans change over time. Maybe not. You know, maybe this has been altered. Maybe this has been fabricated to push us away from what we're actually supposed to be, which is closer to the Bible. And again, I'm not coming from like a devout Christian place telling you guys you need to read the Bible or anything like that. You know, I'm just looking at history and thinking like, okay, these people really hate the Bible, yet they kill anybody who doesn't follow what they say. I'm talking about the Vatican. Like they began to move away from the Bible, alter it, change it. And a lot of those same forces implemented, you know, these torture techniques against heretics, people who went against them, and mind control techniques, the effectivenesses of certain poisons. You know, these are all things that groups like the CIA and Mossad, what have you, like those are all tactics they use now. But the Vatican and these secret societies were doing this stuff before we had our modern world, right? So, yeah, we just have to think about it in a new sense and be very careful of like what we put our belief in, you know, because, yeah, again, like, I think really that's what it comes down to, is if they can get us into this Gnostic belief system, they'll have total control over our soul's destiny. That seems like the what people are afraid of with Gnosticism. Because when I was younger, more naive and starting this podcast, I had no idea that Gnosticism was that, you know, or I didn't see it the way I just articulated it to you guys. And you could have someone on the podcast who's a total Gnostic who will probably tell me or tell you guys that I'm wrong for saying this, because there's a lot of people who believe in Gnosticism and see the world as this sort of syncretic, universal flowering of different equal spiritualities. But what if that's not the case? What if some are actually fallen angels and idol worship, and others are not? You know, what if there was a Messiah who freed us from that idol worship for a reason, and now they're trying to bring that idol worship back to let the Nephilim come and possess us? I mean, there's all sorts of different ways you can interpret that, but I think when it gets down to like what the occult is, it's something that we're all a part of. Like, you know, to learn about it, it is to learn about our Western civilization, because it's all predicated on the occult.
Go ahead, Ant, were you gonna say something?
No, I'm just sucking all of this in, man. It's a lot, but
it's awesome, dude. I have the tendency
to just go on a lecture.
I'm learning, man.
Educate you, man.
So as far as like religious goes, are you more spiritual than religious?
Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about my favorite new sponsor. That's Mood. I love Mood because they're providing affordable, accessible, convenient, and transparent cannabis that's 100% legal and grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. That's right, American cannabis for American listeners. And it's 100% legal. They've got a full selection of cannabis products, I was a huge fan of their Tangy Flower. Wow, it really brought me back to when I had first tried Tangy, and it was incredible. So if you have any doubts, try Mood for yourself, and I doubt you'll be disappointed. Use the promo code CRAZY and get 20% off your first order at mood.com. That's 100% federally legal cannabis, pesticide-free, delivered directly to your front door in a discreet package. Mood.com, promo code CRAZY, and trust me, folks, you're going to love this stuff. I give it the Mystic Mark guarantee. And Mood is going to back that up, because not only do they stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, you get 20% off your first order with promo code CRAZY. All right, let's take a moment to thank our sponsor, Hims. If you need a boost in the bedroom, Hims has got your back. They're there to help you out with personalized ED treatments, and it's all online. They've changed men's healthcare by providing you with access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your home. Hims provides access to a range of doctor-trusted ED treatments like chewable hard mints, Viagra, and Cialis, and their generics for up to 95% cheaper. So this process is 100% online, and there's no need to go visit a doctor. So you just answer a series of questions, no insurance is needed, and you get it all for one low price. Don't just take it from me. Hims has got thousands of trusted subscribers, and Hims can help you find the ED option that works for you. So start your free online visit today at hims.com/crazy. That's hims.com/crazy for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/crazy. The products mentioned are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Prices varied based on product and subscription plan.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, well, I was raised Roman Catholic. I was, you know, baptized, confirmed, and all that stuff that you do when you're going to Catholic church. And then as I got older, you know, I was really kind of an atheist in high school, and I just didn't believe any of it because I was questioning everything, conspiracy theory mode. But then I smoked weed, and my whole life changed, and I began to see the things that you can't sense with your five senses as more real than I ever knew before. So that really threw everything else I thought into question, and, you know, I could no longer be atheist. And since then, I do believe in God and a creator, and that's kind of, you know, taken me a while to sort of sort everything out. I think everybody should come to their own conclusions on this. But for me personally, yeah, I think there's a creator, and sure. I don't know that the church has it all right, but I think there's something really important with the Bible and Christ. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been suppressed so hard by so many other forces, mm-hmm. right? So, and the same could be said about, you know, other religions too. I don't think there's no value in that. I just think that Christianity is vital to us because we're in the Western civilization and it's been affected, you know, so much by Christianity that to not understand it is like doing yourself a disservice of understanding history.
Yeah. No, my mom would love you. She's Roman Catholic. She's very, you know, into that. But I've been just getting back into it actually recently because your thing was weed. I mean, I love weed, but I could talk about this on this podcast because it's a conspiracy podcast. I really can't on the golf, but I got into mushrooms lately. And I microdose sometimes, but I also macrodose. And I'll tell you what, that's really when I start thinking about the creator and I get a little very spiritual. And it's just the mind opens up. The third eye certainly opens up. And that's really when I get into the conspiracy world too, man. It's I tell Raj, he's scared of it. He's scared of trying. I said, try with me one time and we'll talk conspiracies all night long, buddy. But yeah, that's really where I really go deep. And but I'm in the same boat as you. I do want to read like the Bible from start to finish. I want to actually like from the, my sister did an audio book, I believe, and it was the Old Testament, the New Testament, and they talk about each episode after. That might be the thing for me because I don't
you
know.
You should if listen to Sam's podcast. He listens to Johnny Cash reading the Bible.
Does he? Okay. Yeah. All right. But I'm very interested. I heard it's a great story. Very dark in some parts. But have you read the Bible, Mark?
No, that's something I've aspired to do. But no, I have some understanding of what I learned from growing up Roman Catholic. But now, like over the past few months, is really when I've started getting more interested in this. At first, I was mostly interested in it from the historical perspective, but now I'm sort of like at a crossroads where if I don't read it, then I'll probably lack the understanding I need to really know some of the symbols and recognize some of the symbols that make their way into like the Merovingian bloodline and like the Holy Grail and the Ark of the Covenant and what all these other symbols mean and why these secret societies seem to be so obsessed with them, like Skull and Bones. There's the skull, and at first you just think like, okay, maybe this just has to do with death, right? But then you find out that they actually collect skulls in their tomb in New Haven, and you're like, well, what's up with that, you know? And there's all sorts of occult reasons why someone might want to collect skulls. It goes back to like some of the oldest archaeological sites they found at like Göbekli Tepe and Karahan Tepe. They found like piles of skulls in like a pyramid, basically. And they theorized that this was some sort of shamanic ritual that they're doing, you know, back whenever this site was active. So skulls have always had a sort of power, but particularly in over people, but particularly in medieval times, it was believed that not just the skull, but body parts of a saint imbued a sort of magical quality to whoever possessed them. And furthermore, a skull, I think it was Saint Denis of Paris, whose head fell off, or he was killed. I think they cut his head off, and he was seen the next day walking through town with his head in his arms. And it's just like a legend. I don't, you know, how true that is, who knows,
right.
But it's a medieval legend. And, I guess the church then kept his head somewhere and it became like an oracle, right? Mm-hmm. So you can use this in some sort of occult ritual to divine the future or see through a portal into another realm, potentially to gain visions that can benefit you in some way. So there's this strange, you know, fascination with skulls that does have a utilitarian purpose in the occult sense, which is what I'm always looking for. Like, well, why would somebody do this, right? It can't be just a trophy, right? Like Geronimo's skull was taken by Prescott Bush from Fort Sill, Oklahoma in the early 1900s or late 1800s. And you got to ask yourself, like, was that just because, you know, the America had been fighting this war in the West against all these different bands of Native Americans, and it was like a big trophy to have one of their heads? Or was he actually taking the spiritual power away from that group of people by taking one of their, you know, the Native Americans didn't have saints, but Geronimo was said to have supernatural abilities. He could read the code signs that the Union Army were sending to each other. I think it was in some sort of, it was probably Morse, but they were using like signal lights to send the messages. And he didn't know Morse code, but he could, I guess, psychically pick up the message. And then all sorts of other things that they attribute to him, like being able to, you know, go in invisible at certain points and, you know, see from really far distances and all sorts of strange abilities. And you can get this sense from what now is kind of like an American tradition, which is anytime you're on a high ledge jumping to a, you know, great plummet, whether that's in water or maybe from an airplane, you're told to say Geronimo, right? And this was now it's like in movies and stuff, so people just naturally say it. But in the U.S. Army, they would actually use this as like a power phrase because they're kind of, you know, scared of jumping out of these planes during World War II. So they would, to get power, and there's Native Americans in the armed forces during World War II. They would chant Geronimo's name, the courage to jump out of the plane, right? So this takes on a whole nother, you know, emphasis when you realize that Geronimo wasn't just like anyone. He was like a very spiritual, important, significant figure in this time period. And to take his skull and bring it to Yale, New Haven, where some of the first schools for Native Americans were thought up. Like the people from Yale were like, all right, how are we going to deal with the Native Americans? Well, let's turn them into good Christians. So they created this thing called the Stockbridge School in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And it was pretty much like, listen, you either take a hike and leave forever, you go to this school, or we kill you. So that was why, you know, nowadays you go around New England, and Roger, you know this, you got all these Native American place names that half people can't even pronounce, but where are the Native Americans? You know, Massachusetts, Connecticut, right? You know, I mean, all the different beaches, Musquamacut, Hammonasset, like these are all Native American words, but there's no Native Americans. And if you do meet them, they look kind of white because they've been assimilated. They've been brought into the Christianized culture of that time, and Yale was definitely a part of that. So yeah, when they take Geronimo's skull, they're not doing this just as like a, you know, a fun prank, as they want you to think now. If you read, you know, the Wikipedia, it's like a rumor. They don't even admit that they actually have the skull, but you know, it's been established through various different legal battles that have been kind of waged against Yale from various different tribes connected to Geronimo. So there's good reason to suspect that it really did happen, and it's not just a legend. But there's a lot of strange stuff, you know, and plus, you know, to think Prescott Bush at that time, he had no way of ever conceiving that his son and grandson would go on to become, you know, hold the highest office in the land, right? Yeah. So maybe that power of Geronimo was transmuted in some way to them. Obviously, there's the whole skull and bones racket and how they put these people in certain positions. And, you know,
have you seen the skulls? The movie Mike got me into that. There's actually, I guess it's Mike. Did you know that there's a couple of them? There's the skulls 2 and 3.
Paul Walker. That was the best one.
Yeah, they're not as good. Paul Walker and Josh Jackson, and takes place at Yale. It's a pretty good flick if you haven't seen it, Mark. I mean, obviously it's Hollywood, but
yeah, I have a while ago.
Yeah,
I did watch it a while ago,
2001. Yeah,
it definitely made an impression on me. I watched it before I really got into this research the way I am now, because I just didn't have the time back then. But what's strange for me is, like, when I was in college, I went to Gateway in New Haven. I think they have a different name now. I think it's like Connecticut Community College now, which is strange because that's just CCC 333. But yeah, I don't know. It's stupid, but I went to this community college for like a year and a half. I dropped out, but while I was there, I was just really fascinated with New Haven and walking around the city and looking at all the strange buildings. And I met this guy who ended up becoming a friend of mine. He happened to be from Arizona and loosely related to Geronimo. And he moved to New Haven to protest Geronimo's skull being, you know, in the tomb. But he didn't protest with like a sign or a picket line or anything like activists typically do. He would stand in front of the Skull and Bones tomb every day at noon and scream Geronimo's name at the top of his lungs. And it was his way of letting Yale know, like, hey, I know you have my, you know, ancestor here locked away, and we're not going to let you forget about it. So meeting him was really powerful and made a big impact on me. And I went and took everything he said to heart and went and looked up what Skull and Bones was and found the books and realized, damn, this guy really knows what he's talking about. And back then, you know, the internet, obviously it was only 2012, the internet was probably even more ripe for this kind of stuff than it is now. So it was just a treasure trove of information I would search online. But still, you know, books are, for whatever reason, more. I could read a book way longer than I can stare at a screen. So I found a couple books on the subject. And then sure enough, a couple years later, I find myself working in New Haven. And I have a job as a bread delivery guy. So I'm out at like 3, 4, 5 in the morning, early, driving around in the city, which is like the creepiest time to be out and about, especially in a city like New Haven. But either way, I was in Yale a lot for that job because they had a big contract with Yale delivering bread to their different, what do you call it? The like lunchrooms or whatever you call that when
courtyard, in college.
The unions.
Yeah. Yeah. Wherever kids get their food. And there's all different schools that are all broken up by what, you know, the students are there to study. Yeah, they're majors. So there's all these different schools I was able to go into within Yale's campus just delivering bread. And one of them happened to be the Yale Department of Economics. It's not your typical school setup. You know, it's a very old city. So everything's kind of open. The campus is open. It's not like your typical college campus where it's like reserved in a certain area with like a, you know, security guard at every entrance. It's not like that. So anyways, this one building, it's not even like a real school building. It's like a home that's been repurposed as a classroom. And that was one of my delivery locations that I would go to every Tuesday. And one Tuesday I'm there, I go in through this weird, wacky way that the janitor showed me how to get into this building. And I walk out the front door. And as I'm walking out the front door, I look down at the newspaper and it said, George H.W. Bush, former resident of New Haven, you know, died last evening. You know, and then it went into where he lived when he was in New Haven. And it said the exact building, the address that I was standing in reading that. So I was at 88 Hill Avenue. And that's where him, his wife, and President George Bush Jr. lived when they lived in New Haven, in that building that's now a part of Yale's campus. So it's just such a weird synchronicity for me. Like, how am I reading about this guy's death in the home that he used to live in? that I've been going to every Tuesday. You know, it's just, it was so mind blowing that I was like, okay, this has to be, you know, a sign, like I should look into this more and not give up on what Amos told me about Geronimo. Like, clearly this is important. And then later on, like last year, I was talking to my grandmother and I found out that my great grandmother danced with George H.W. Bush Sr. at a ball that they had in New Haven, because she was like a socialite. Oh, she was married, you know, a couple times and always dating different men. Frank Sinatra asked her out and she turned him down. She had, you know, this kind of social life and dance with George H.W. Bush. So it's just so weird, like, you know, the little ways that you're connected to these things. And I think the same is true for anybody that goes and tries to research, whether it's their genealogy or the town they're born in, or even just the country they're born in, like you're gonna inevitably find some connection to your own existence. I think that's the most interesting part for me, is like how that kind of came to the forefront in this synchronistic way. And that's part of why I kind of call myself Mystic Mark on the podcast, because it's synchromysticism that's really pulled me through these different conspiracies. You know, I could have taken like an encyclopedia approach and just grabbed, you know, a book and studied everything I could until I thought I knew everything. But instead, you know, I let the information come to me in this kind of mystical way. And I think that's the most important thing I can share with anyone, is like, you can find that learning too. And it's like a personal relationship that you have with God, the universe, however you want to describe it. And you can learn a lot. You know, I think this is, for me, it's evolved into learning about Skull and Bones and Yale and these different aspects of New England culture. But, you know, if you're listening to this from Area 51 or Florida or, you know, wherever you are, Roger, like there are patterns particularly that I think everybody can find some connection, draw some connection to from their own life. And I know you're in Connecticut, Roger, but specifically.
No, I'm in New York. I'm in upstate New York.
Oh, okay. So you're near Connecticut. Then for you too, I mean, New York, we could talk a whole 2-3 hours just about New York and all the strange stuff going on, which if you've ever been to the capital city, Albany, you know.
I'm 10 minutes from there.
I work in Albany. Well,
okay, so then, all right, so you guys know this big egg-shaped building?
Yeah, of course.
That weird-shaped building?
Yeah, well, tell me about the egg. I've been in there a million times. Shows everything. Tell me about it. It's only like there's only two in the world. I know that about it.
So I think that that's like a huge ritual symbol there. Like that egg is, like when I first saw it, I was like, whoa. I could grab a book that talks about it, because I don't know off the top of my head the specifics. Yo, but let me pause. I gotta piss so bad.
I'm sitting here locked in and I gotta piss.
Grab that pause. Yeah, we'll pause.
Let's go. All right, we found the book, right? Here we go.
Yeah, so Albany's egg. It doesn't say much about the egg itself, other than it is sort of an allusion in this author's mind to a sort of ET contact. It's supposed to be like a UFO.
Yeah, I've always said it's been a spaceship. I've always said it's been a spaceship.
That's a big part of the symbolism. And this is because Albany's kind of like the Freemasonic capital, and it has a pyramid built into the sort of structure of the city itself, like where
these pull up the egg. Pull up a picture of the egg.
Yeah, I always thought that about I live in Florida now, but I lived in Chicago for a while.
Okay.
And I always thought that about the bean. Like the bean was a spaceship.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, interesting. Like it had to do something with that.
I don't know anything about the bean, but yeah, I heard about it because they've been talking about it on Kill Tony recently. But there's a place there's a place in Albany called Clinton Park, and that's named after one of the famous governors of New York. Yeah, pull it up.
Yeah, I know where Clinton Park is too.
That's the egg. Look at that. Looks just like a spaceship. That doesn't look like an egg to me at all.
No, I was just about to say that. It almost looks like the ship from Flight of the Navigator.
There's another one. Clinton Park, Albany.
It almost looks like a bowl.
I'm not able to see whatever you guys are sharing. I guess you guys can see it, though.
Oh, it's not coming off of you? Really?
I just see a black screen.
Huh. Hold on. Let me remove and bring it back up. I'm just getting new at this on this end, so. You guys saw it, though?
It could be something on my end. If the three of you saw it, it must be something on my end that I'm not able to see it. But I know what it looks like. I got a picture here. But the Albany Pyramid, what this author calls the Albany Pyramid, is he gets that from drawing a line from Clinton Park out towards Schenectady, New York, and then up towards the Adirondack Mountains between Cohos and Troy. So this is from Gaia Matrix, really super interesting book, really great guy, Peter Shampoo. He's been on my podcast a couple times, but he basically uses divining rods or, the witch sticks.
Yeah, like to find water, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he finds ley lines, and he's written a whole book about, you know, these different ley lines. And Clinton Park is named after DeWitt Clinton, who was a very famous Freemasonic governor of New York at a time when the Freemasons were kind of getting a lot of bad attention across the country, and it led to the first third party. So, you know, we have the Democrats and the Republicans and all the different parties that came before them, but there's always been two parties. And when the Masons caused this big controversy, the whole country was like, no, we're not going to trust these Masons anymore. Let's start something called the Anti-Masonic Party. And then this kind of grew into what became like the Libertarians, Independent, and so on and so forth. There's other, you know, reasons why Libertarians and Independents came about, but this is technically the first third party. I'm trying to look and see if there's anything explicitly tying the egg to Freemasonry, but this might not be the book.
There's so much Freemasonry in Tartaria in upstate New York, like Albany and the Troy area. You see so much of it. It's wild. It's just the big doorways and that kind of thing.
Clinton. Can you see that, Mark? I just brought it back up again. I tried it again. Or is it still black for you? You guys see it?
I see it.
How about you, Mark? No?
You know what? It could be because I'm not logged in to my StreamYard. I don't know. Don't worry about it.
Whatever. No, it's all right.
If you're recording it on your end, then
you'll be able to see it on YouTube. Everyone could see it. Yeah. So they should be able to. Absolutely. It's that's pretty wild with the Freemasons.
Fucking crazy.
So you want to hear something funny? Florida's about
big with Freemason
before
stuff.
Before I knew about Freemasonry, like that it was like a satanic, they weren't like good people and all this stuff. I was in like a poker league, dude, and we were looking for a place to play. And this guy that we played with, I'm not like friends with or anything. He's like, oh, I got a place we could play. He goes, we could play at our joint. He goes, I'm a Mason. He goes, I got a spot. So I don't know, like, if that's bad that I played in their poker.
Well, here's the thing, like all organizations, somebody has to do like the dirty work. Has to do the front of office work. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the Freemasons that you meet in your local town or what have you, they're just normal guys who are using like the lowest rungs of Freemasonry to benefit themselves in some way. Okay. And they're probably benefiting the people above them. So in a way, you know, by keeping these secrets, they're definitely like consenting to whatever goes on in the upper echelons of Freemasonry. But I think unless somebody's, you know, a 33rd degree and also within all of these other royal sort of societies, then being a Freemason is kind of like role playing at this point in history. Like,
the Knights of the Columbus member, dude. It's similar to that.
Well, Well, Knights of Columbus, yeah, similar. But again, like Knights of Columbus goes back to the Vatican. So in a way, yeah, like everybody who's a Knights of Columbus, they're giving money to the Vatican in the same way that anybody who's a Freemason is giving money to the Grand Lodge, right? Yeah. So, and what are those Grand Lodges doing? What is the Vatican doing? Is it in our best interests? Should we join these things? Probably not. But does that mean that the average person in it is like a blood-sucking vampire? No. Like, we don't need to burn these people at the stake, but we should question them and ask them, you know, hey, do you understand what your affiliation is supporting? Because you are consenting to something that might not be good overall for humanity. Because if you have to keep something a secret, what does that imply?
Right.
You know, if you're keeping a secret, it means you have something that you don't want people to find out. Why? Because you're privileged, because you're elite. I thought we're all equal. And that's the same club that they beat you over the head with is, oh, we're all equal. We're all equal. Diversity, equity, inclusion. Meanwhile, they're turning everyone into an androgynous queer, you know, and it's like, that's not diverse. Everybody looks the same. The women have short hair. The men have short hair. They're all wearing dresses. What do you tell, you know, it's like, right, what is this? And right, all of these secret societies with their occult beliefs, they venerate this androgynous entity. Like, a lot of their gods that they venerate are androgynous. So you have to ask yourself, like, well, we have all these androgynous people in society out of the blue, or is it because they've been influenced by something to create this situation where there's more androgynous people in the world? Why would they want that? Maybe because depopulation, they want less people, we're easier to control, less people are having children because they're LGBTQ and androgynous and think that creating a human life is somehow going to harm the earth, which for the longest time in history, the whole thing was have a big family, get your own property, raise livestock, grow vegetables, support yourself, be sovereign under God's, you know, in God's kingdom. Like, this is the fundamental reason why the Puritans came to America in many ways. But again, it got, you know, lost the plot, Lord of the Flies style, and, you know, people got a little too greedy. And then next thing you know, we're right back to the same problems we had in Europe with the Vatican and these royal families controlling the every affair and taxing us. You know, that's what it comes down to. And now here in America, we've kind of got ourselves in a situation where we're like, all right, well, we're free. But then at the same time, we're being manipulated. We're allowing our government to be, you know, bought out by these foreign, you know, interests, namely the people in Europe, like the Bilderbergs, the Council of Rome, you know, all these different strange organizations that, for the most part, have no business in telling us Americans what to do unless they benefit from our downfall or our enslavement. Otherwise, why would they care? Why would they meddle in our affairs unless they have something to lose by not doing so, right? So I think they do, you know, because they're losing their people, right? If one country in the world is free, nobody's going to want to stay in an unfree world unless you're North Korea and you program people to only know about North Korea. Like, and I was just watching a week ago on YouTube, this guy pirates television programs from North Korea, and it's insane. It's like every day they're watching an action movie about their president, and he's wearing leather jackets, and he's pointing at missiles exploding, and he's kissing babies in hospitals, and everything's like, look at how awesome our guy is. He's saving us. He's, and like, if you look at America, like, a lot of people said that about Joe Biden, or a lot of people feel that way now about Donald Trump. So it's all manipulation. Yeah. It's all occult manipulation. And the more you can shine light on these things, they're no longer hidden. They no longer have an effect. So the occult is not evil. When we can understand it, it becomes something that we can address in a rational and responsible way. And I think, ideally, you know, show people the alternative, which is, you know, in a perfect world, which is going to sound, you know, like a stretch considering where we are nowadays, but in a perfect world, things like occult manipulation would be unnecessary because we'd be working together. Mm-hmm. And people would work together towards a common ideal that's not communism, but sovereignty. People allowing each other to live out their, you know, God-given destiny in a way that is suited to them, you know? And I think if that was allowed to happen, again, perfect world, yada, 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 there's no route to it without hard work and discipline. And that's probably what people don't want to hear. And probably why this carrot on a stick of idolatry and pleasure and all these other things that have kind of degraded that conservative moral sort of guiding light, that's kind of where these conspiracies come from, right? It's that interplay. It's the same thing that happened with Elvis, right? Like Elvis came about in the 50s, and what were all the fathers doing? They had a conspiracy against Elvis. He was shaking his hips. He was a magician of some kind, wooing their children away from these morals that they had worked so hard to ingrain in them. And here comes Elvis shaking his hips, and it throws it all out of the window for them, right? Yeah. Well, come to find out, Elvis actually had a deal with the devil. He admitted it himself. He made a pact with some sort of entity. He might not have thought of it as the devil. There's a lot of strange occult stuff with Elvis, even to the point of he had a twin brother who died in the womb. And he said that twin brother was with him throughout his whole life, like a sort of a spirit ally in the other world. So think about it. You know, this guy Elvis, who hypnotized America, you know, I just gave you an example of how a conspiracy starts, but then there actually is truth behind it. So are those fathers of that time so foolish for telling their kids not to go see Elvis? In a sense, no. But in the other sense, yeah, it is. It wasn't so bad, right? Like, you know, people danced and listened to some guitar and some lyrics that we think are cheesy now and probably didn't cause the most damage, but it did lead to this social degradation that, again, it's at the crux of what it means to be a conspiracy theorist and question these things. You know, you have to, you know, entertain all of it and be able to question all of it.
So, Mark, I want to just switch over to another conspiracy, another one of my favorite ones.
Hit me.
I think it's quite obvious now that we did not land on the moon, but do you think the time is going to come that we will, like with Elon and what's going on? Like, what is your thought? Is even on the
moon? I think he's a grifter. I didn't answer your question before, but I think, you know, what we know about NASA is probably the same thing that'll happen with SpaceX. You know, it's like, it's just a money grift, and maybe Trump's faction is in on the SpaceX grift because they're against NASA, and NASA is a part of the old regime that the Bushes and Clintons and Obama and Biden and all the rest, they're a part of that cabal. So it could just be, you know, a lesser of two evils type situation where, hey, NASA's fraud, nobody trusts NASA, so let's get this new, you know, tech billionaire guy to go up and fly through the Van Allen belt, which maybe we can't even get through. Maybe those rockets just fly up and explode and the rest of it is CGI, Hollywood, you know.
Because I have I live in Florida, so I live right where they shoot, where they launch a lot of the rockets.
Oh, yeah.
And he's had multiple blow up, and they say it's because they went straight up. Is there such thing as an firmament?
So what they're trying to say is that if it goes straight up, it takes on too much resistance from the atmosphere and they almost have to like slice through at an angle. You know, to me, that's like just more conditioning and indoctrination. I think the truth is Wernher von Braun was like alluding to the fact that there was a dome over the earth. It said it on his tombstone or something, or on his deathbed. He recited something from the Bible.
Tombstone, yeah.
Yeah, okay, the tombstone. It has something to do with the firmament. And, you know, again, like, I'm not exactly coming at this from, like, a flat earther perspective, but I think there's there's truth to that, you know, that there's something stopping them from going up there. And maybe instead of this being, you know, spacecraft, it's the Nazis had this Nazi bell that worked really well, and they went to the inner earth, another dimension, and they're like, listen, this technology, these things that we just opened up, like, it's too crazy for people to understand, so we have to give it to them in something that fits what they already know, which they know about the planets. And ancient people have talked about the planets and the gods. You know, they were talking about Martians in the 1800s. They were all sorts of stories about weird things in the sky, and it was probably Martians from Mars. So there's already this kind of idea of Martians out there. So I think they just played upon that and said, like, well, they already kind of believe in this Martian thing. Let's just go with that. Okay, it's not secret government aircraft, it's Martians, it's aliens. And now they have plausible deniability anytime anything is seen, and you start thinking about space and Star Wars and Star Trek and all this other crap propaganda they've thrown at you since the space age began. And it started with the Jetsons and Disney having literally Wernher von Braun there to tell you about the space missions. And I mean, it's all an op, right? So yeah, I think when it comes down to, like, what's going on today, it's a combination of them lying to us so they can raise money to do these things that there's no way anyone can prove. Like, no journalist in the world can go to Mars and say, hey, there's no rover here. But you can go to Utah, maybe, and with binoculars see them doing these, you know, rover missions in the sands of Utah and filming it in just such a way that it makes it look like Mars. Like, who knows, maybe we will find that. There's definitely really smart people who have determined a lot of the footage we see is computer generated, you know. Right. So if that's the case, then, you know, why computer generated? If you're out there and you have the equipment, you have the endless budget, why not invent a camera that can work in space? You know, right. Why not?
And they say even all the cameras that are, like, in inner space where they show the round Earth are fisheye cameras. Like, why do they have to use fisheye cameras?
Well, and they're not even past low Earth orbit. So, like, all the satellites are below the Van Allen belt.
Right, right.
You can have satellites that aren't in. So they're not in space. They're just in
floating
the
around inner space. Right, right, right. Nothing's ever, I think, I mean, they say they have been the rovers, but I really truthfully don't think anything's been outside the Van Allen belt. I really don't. I mean,
I can only say that when I seen that one SpaceX launch when I was down in Orlando a few weeks ago, it did go up straight for a little bit, and then it did take the angle. The
curves off, right?
It took an angle off to go up. Yeah, that was pretty crazy, though.
Yeah, Mark might have said it right about the why reasons why they may blow up if they go straight up. Yeah. It's because the force of the atmosphere is too strong that way. It makes sense.
It really does.
But like the moon landing, when I was younger, and then, you know, they show you the video in school, like, we're all the same age, so we had that cheap big old box TV just like everybody else, 13 channels or whatever, you're watching this thing. And I always thought, like, how can you show this, them on the moon, when we don't even have internet down here yet? We don't have multiple things to help.
Well, you didn't even know what internet was then. There was no such thing as internet.
So how are you filming a moon landing and showing it to us? And
bullshit.
Yeah. And who was holding the camera when he was coming down the thing, you know?
The shoes didn't match.
Guys, I got my mom on a couple already, so I got her on the moon landing. She listen, this is a 7-year-old woman. It's really tough getting the old folks. And she's with me on 9/11 now, guys. It's great. It's great. I've been sending my mom's links. Although the other day, she was like, Anthony, she's like, is this literally all you do now, is just look up conspiracy stuff? I'm like, you got me, mom.
Once you look up one, though, your algorithm's flooded.
That's
with it.
The
you don't
problem.
Have a choice.
That's the problem. Yeah,
you don't have a choice.
I listen. I don't gamble now, so now I just look up conspiracy shit podcast. That's my new world. I love it. So there it's great, man.
Addicted to the truth.
It's great.
That's the healthiest addiction I've ever heard of.
Yeah,
Mark, man, this has been awesome, dude. I've sat here for an hour and changed and learned so much just sitting here.
Have him back on and do like another topic.
Yeah, I mean, we could literally go all day. I just feel bad. I don't want to take too much of your time. It's getting late here on a school night.
No worries. I appreciate it. It's been a blast telling you guys what I know and, you know, having some conversation here on Conspiracy Chaos. I love it. Yeah, thanks for having me.
We appreciate you.
One more time, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you, man?
Yeah, myfamilythinksimcrazy.com is the best place to find all the links, and then you can listen to the show on all the platforms. I'm on YouTube. You know, I don't put all of the episodes on YouTube just because you know how YouTube is, and the other platforms. I think Rockfin is probably the one I've posted the most on, but I'm on Odyssey and Rumble too. People like those. He goes deep, guys.
Like, there's some really awesome. Good. Obviously, you heard him talk here tonight.
Yeah, and he's got that dope intro song too. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right. AI on. Baby. AI. AI hooked us up with a song.
Yeah. No, this was before in 2020. There was no AI song makers yet, so. I hit up this guy who has his own podcast, who's a rapper, and he created that intro song for me. But everybody's like, is that Cypress Hill? How'd you find that? And I'm like, no, I bought it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Roger's the king on AI now. I mean, and he hooked
I'm
this
getting
one
there,
up.
Man. I'm learning, yeah, man.
It's fun. Yes. Yeah. Suno.ai is a good one.
That's what I use.
Yep. Oh, I could tell. I heard the song. I think that's the only website that does that, actually. But I'm sure it'll change. But they kind of invent. Whoever owns Suno invented the AI that makes music because it's a special type of AI. It's not like this. Like ChatGPT can't make a song for you. No. You know, it's a certain type of program. So, but yeah, that's that whole program is crazy. I've used it a little bit on my podcast as well.
You did it the one you did with Sam. What were you doing?
Yes.
Steve Harvey.
We had Sam talk to Steve Harvey AI. That was character.ai, which, that one's pretty scary because the AI can have a full conversation with you and even like remember it, resent you, hate you. Like it's the full gamut of emotions.
I
love you, all of it. It's weird.
I actually just came across.
That's the scariest part about AI.
I just came across a podcast. It was on my algorithm of a guy who has a podcast where he literally talks to dead people on AI. And from the 1800s, and he asked them questions and they respond full answers and they're like, well, you know, it's insane.
Well, here's the thing. I tested that out on my Patreon. People can hear me interrogate AI Karl Marx and have him tell me why communism is never a good idea. It has never worked in the history of communism. He told me himself that it's never worked. So, it's not reliable because, you know, Karl Marx probably would never have said that in real life. I don't know. Maybe we'll get to the point where they resemble what they're actually trying to portray. But right now, it seems like it's all kind of the same AI mind talking to you. And they kind of get certain general things about people, but you can't. It's not like you're going to have like a Nikola Tesla AI tell you like an invention that he forgot to write down. You know what I mean? Like it's all shit that is already available online.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but anyways, awesome. Thanks for having me, guys, and happy to come back on anytime. And if you'll let me, I'll post this on my feed so my audience can learn about your new show and
would be awesome, dude.
Thank you so much.
So yeah, we'll talk again soon and keep me in the loop.
Appreciate you, man.
Make sure you guys go check out My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. Check us out on Conspiracy Chaos, now available on Apple and Spotify. As well as YouTube. Appreciate everybody tuning in here tonight. Mark, once again, man, appreciate your time. Appreciate everybody tuning in, boys. We'll talk to you soon. Later.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.